There will be a thrilling afternoon of music on September 21st at the New Marlborough Meeting House as the award-winning electroacoustic violin and cello duo Arkai appears in concert at the Meeting House. The group has inspired audiences around the world through their genre-defying string music, blending everything from classic ballads to fascinating and exciting new music. Graduates of the Juilliard School, their past engagements have included performances at such diverse venues as the Met, Joe's Pub, the U.S. Air Force Academy, and let us not forget about Lincoln Center. Two incredible musicians who join us this morning. Jonathan Myron is here and Philip Shegog. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight to have you both with us on the roundtable.
Thank you for having us.
Very nice to have you both here. So what you do is amazing. What you go out and perform is incredible. The energy that the two of you have is stunning. Give us a sense of how long it has been in the making for that to come together for the two of you.
Wow. Well, both Flip and I have been playing together now for about 6 years. And to be honest, I think the electricity that we had was immediate from the moment that we met. Honestly, we met, both Philip and I are graduates of the Juilliard School. We were nominated by Juilliard to rep them at this conference held at Juilliard 6 years ago. That's where we met. There was a party one night. We had our instruments with us and we started to jam. And for those who don't know, jamming means like improvising music on the spot, coming up with something that has not been pre-planned, essentially. And so there, Philip and I were jamming. We jammed for over an hour. We had like 60 other people in the room who started dancing with us. We were kind of the DJs that night. And so it was clear to us from the moment we started playing together that we had something special. And here we are, 6 years later, still doing it. And yeah, doing it bigger than ever, actually. Yeah.
Now, first of all, Philip, do most times when you go to a party, do you bring the instruments?
You know, it's kind of funny that you ask. At this point, it's actually rare for us to be traveling without our instruments. I
Right.
won't say that we made it a conscious choice to always travel with our instruments, but that night in particular, I think we had an inkling that something fun might happen. And so we had our instruments with us just in case. And that's kind of the way of life, right? Is you never know when the opportunities are going to arise. And so you want to be ready for when they do.
So I have in my mind a question, and hopefully I'll be able to get it out where it isn't flumpy. But let me just ask, as you, the two of you, have come out of Juilliard and you are going into the, well, let's just use the party as an example, and you're going in there and you're saying, okay, we're going to jam. And is that like, this is all of the stuff that we couldn't do when we were when we were within our studies at Juilliard, or this is a culmination of all of the things that we have been doing over our studies at Juilliard?
It's a bit of both, honestly. Just so that you know, both Philip and I are classically trained. We grew
Right.
up playing Mozart and Beethoven. Improvisation really isn't a big thing in classical music. And so at this party, here we were, and you can bet you we weren't jamming on Mozart and Beethoven. We were playing classic rock covers, pop covers. We played some world music at different times. We went into many, many different sonic landscapes. And I think that moment for us was a, oh my gosh. There's another kid at Juilliard who plays the string instrument that can jam, that can improvise. That was a big moment for us because yeah, that doesn't you don't really find too many people at Juilliard who can do that in the classical division.
Now, talk about your instruments for a moment, because the videos I have seen, especially the cello, but the violin too, these do not look what I would say to be a normal violin or a normal cello. Explain what those are.
You're absolutely right. So Jonathan and I both play the acoustic violin and cello, which is what most people are familiar with, but we also play the electric violin and electric cello, which we like to joke are kind of the long lost cousins of the good old electric guitar, which everyone knows. Everyone knows the electric guitar, but the electric violin and cello have been around for almost as long, but they just haven't gotten the love in the cultural spotlight. And so we love being able to combine those two worlds, our classical training and the tradition and the depth of musical literature that's there, combining that with these new modern instruments, all the power of technology at our disposal, and bringing those two worlds together. And so They, like you said, they are so funky looking. They're instantly recognizable. We think that they're just really cool also, and they open up just infinite sonic landscapes that we can explore.
Because the cello, the electric cello, looks as if it is it's hollow. There's a center spine to it, and then it, almost a suggestion of a shape of a
Yeah.
cello.
They're really like rare, they're kind of like modern art pieces in many ways, and they're really amazing because they, the technology works just kind of like an electric guitar works. And so there are times when it can sound like a violin and a cello, but times when it can sound like an electric guitar as well. We can really mold them and shape them so that they can sound like anything. And I think that's kind of what we're so jazzed about and what we love playing with when we create using these instruments.
So where does someone find this as young musicians coming out of Juilliard? So how do you find instruments like this that are to your liking and work for the purposes that you are trying to employ?
So the instruments themselves, you can just buy on Amazon or eBay, right? It's actually way easier to buy them than the acoustic instruments. The acoustic ones, you have to go to the rare art dealer violin shops, but the electric ones are products, right? They're manufactured, mined by the Yamaha Corporation, right? Motorcycles, refrigerators, and electric cellos. But then the tricky thing is learning how to play them, because we know how to play the normal versions and they kind of work the same way, right? We know our hands know how to make the notes happen and how to get around the instruments. But then the real process for us leaving school was figuring out what can we create with these new instruments, because with the electric string instruments, you really have to, the artistry is in creating the sound. It's how are we going to shape and mold the sound that's coming out of the instruments. And so that was kind of the learning process for us. Not so much like how to find them, but then once we had them, how does our artistry inform the decisions that we make with them?
So I find this fascinating. So I was just looking up, if I were to purchase a Yamaha electric cello, it would run me around $3,000. But the point is that unlike the acoustic instruments that you describe, which can be, millions of dollars, depending on the derivation, this is something that then the sound is more up to you, right? It's how you of what you create with it. It gives you more say in the sound that's emanating from that instrument.
That's absolutely right. It's almost like Lego blocks, you might think, that we played with as kids. It's like you have the starting piece, which is the instrument itself, but then you have to decide how every single step along the way that creates the eventual sound that comes out on the other end. And it is a whole different kind of way of thinking about it, because with the acoustics, you know what you're going to get. And like you said, you can get more and more expensive instruments that maybe are older or have been kept up really well, and so the tone is rich and deep. But you know the kind of sound that you're going to get. With the electrics, it is totally up to you, which can be make a very steep barrier to entry at the beginning, but if you really commit yourself to it, unlocks infinite possibilities.
So for a show like the one that you'll be doing in New Marlboro, what is a set list like for you? How much of that is improvised? How much of that is set? And how much of it is the two of you looking at each other and saying, "All right, let's give this a shot."
Yeah, so our set at the Meeting House will be a mix. It will have our old instruments that are hundreds of years old. We're gonna have these amazing electric instruments, and it's gonna be a mix between some of our originals, but also classic tunes that everybody knows, but reimagined, archive style. And so what I would say is that when we perform, we have the intimacy of a string duo. But at the same time, there are moments when it sounds like there's a full orchestra behind us. There are times when we sound like a rock band. And so I think for the audiences, what they can be prepared for is just an epic journey. And this is actually a very exciting show for us because we just released an album and we're actually going to be celebrating that album release as well.
How do you describe the new album?
Oof. So the new album is called Crossroads, and it's actually our first album. And for us, it is a musical, almost autobiography. It's telling a story that is the story that we went through coming out of the classical world and trying to figure out who we were, what our voice was, what our dreams were, where we wanted to go, and making all of the decisions along that path to find who we were. And so that is described musically through this all original album, an all electric album. So all the tracks are created with our electric instruments. And the themes that run throughout these different songs are themes of courage, of resilience, of crisis, of hope and renewal, of home. And so all of these things, we can point back to memories for all of these different tunes. And we hope that in a way, they are also universal feelings. And so no matter where people are coming from, they can find a little bit of their story, right? Their memories, their dreams as well within it.
How is the that was a beautiful answer, by the way. How is the music written in the sense of the two of you working together to that partnership in the writing of the actual music?
It's highly collaborative. Philip and I will often, when we're trying to write a new piece, we'll literally whip out our phones and we'll turn on voice memos and we'll just start to jam. We'll start to improvise, kind of going back to day one of Archai. And after, going through the journey of an improvised session, we'll listen back to the voice memo and we'll take the nuggets, essentially, and we'll use those nuggets as foundations for pieces. And I would say a lot of these pieces came about that way. And actually, we have a piece on the album called Letters. Letters was written during the pandemic. And so Philip and I were isolated during that time. We didn't have the ability to compose together in the same space. And so the way we wrote Letters was literally by sending voice memos, these audio letters, back and forth to one another of these compositional ideas. And that's how we built this song that really captures that moment in time, capturing the immense kind of solitude and loneliness, a tragic kind of feeling, but also pointing to a more hopeful future with a sense of renewal.
So you use the term build, which I find fascinating. Are there musical notes on a page anywhere, or is it what you have built through these memos that come together that you know what it is?
In many ways, a lot of it really honestly just exists in our heads and in our bodies. So we haven't written out. I mean, we've had a few projects. Honestly, we've had instances where we've actually orchestrated some of our music where we had to write out, what our pieces. And that was a very challenging thing because it was just like, wow, that was so intuitive when it was just, in our bodies and in our minds. But all of a sudden we had to like write it out on the page. And that took a lot of time and effort. Yeah. But I would say
Well,
for the most part, yeah, for the
that
most
sounds like a
part, our music
pain.
is yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just a lot of work, and meanwhile, and something can be lost. You become a slave to what is on the page as opposed to how you're feeling with one another.
Yeah, it is really fascinating that kind of almost continuum or the tension between those two things. And coming from our classical training, right? That's where we came from, is everything, the music, what was on the page. But I think one of the many things that we've discovered kind of on this journey of the last 6 years together is that the music is not just what's on the page. The music is so much beyond that.
Yeah.
And that's, in some ways, the fact that recordings are our primary form of notation, or of kind of fixing things, right, is almost like the purest version, because there might not be a way to notate that. There might not be a way to capture it fully, but the recording itself, right, the sound itself that we create, that's the thing that we always go back to. And so in some ways, our scores are best encapsulated by the recording itself.
And I think that also means that no performance is totally the same, honestly, where there is improvisation throughout. We are changing certain things throughout. And I think for the audience, that gives it a very spontaneous feeling, which I think is really awesome.
It would also indicate to me that there has to be a tremendous amount of trust between the two of you.
Oh yeah, a lot. And we know each other very well, and we know each other's playing very well.
There is so much that happens behind the scenes that I don't think the audience always realizes, but sometimes it's like deer in the headlights, emergency, emergency. But there we are on stage and
You gotta look
we
cool.
have to look cool and calm and collected, right? And we have to
Yes.
show up for the audience. But that's also
But
exciting. Yeah.
perhaps you can see a furrowed brow or an eye twitch and think, "Oh, okay, so now
Oh yeah.
we're going down this road."
Absolutely. Absolutely.
that seems like, to me, that would be the fun of it.
Yeah, never a dull moment, that's for sure.
And then you just hope at the end you're both at the end, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, sometimes it's very much like that, where it's just, all right, I'll see you on the other side and trust that we'll make it there. There are so many stories of, every possible thing that can go wrong has gone wrong at some point, right? It's Murphy's Law.
Sure.
And of course, every time we learn from that, it's like never again, never again. But, in the moment, it can be really hair-raising, but also really exciting.
I mean, just a couple of days ago, we were in New York City and we gave our album release show at Joe's Pub at the Public Theater. And just the first two tunes, I mean, we had a tech malfunction and I couldn't hear myself for the first two tunes. So it was essentially I was riding
Yeah,
blind.
I was trying to kind of, conduct a couple of bars with my bow before I had to start playing, just so he would have the visual sense of where the beat was, and then we go and
Wow.
And then it happens. And I would think that as time goes on, especially over 6 years, hopefully many, many years to come, that you go into a gig like Joe's Pub where you're like, all right, well, there's not really much that can happen that we haven't dealt with before.
And that's true. And so the other things happened that night, and we had backup plans. But this first one was the
It was a
first time this
new.
one ever happened. And so I was just like, wow, okay, what did
Yeah.
we do here?
Yeah. I think that we've got pretty thick skin at this point.
Yeah.
There's not a lot that will phase us.
Yeah,
You know,
that's true.
we'll of course have to adapt and figure out how to solve it in the moment. But at this point, we've seen so much stuff
Yeah.
that it's we know we can get through and give
Yeah.
it a good show.
So let me ask you one more question, and that is about the audience of a typical, and I'm gonna look, I work for public radio, so I feel fairly comfortable being somewhat stereotypical in audiences, but I mean, our audience skews older. A classical music audience skews older. I would even, and I hope nobody gets mad at me over there, but the new Marlboro audience will skew older. What is it like then to realize then that you have your own audience, you have your own following, and sort of mix all of that together?
It's a beautiful thing, actually. I think one thing about Archai is that, when we think about our audience, it's incredibly diverse and the age range spans decades. Literally, one of our biggest fans just turned 100 a couple of years ago, truly. And she'll go to every Archai show and love it. Meanwhile, we'll go and we'll play in schools, and these young kids come up to us and they're totally blown away. And so obviously when we put together a program, we think about the audiences that we're serving. It's a beautiful thing that we have the ability to just reach so many different kinds of audiences, to play different kinds of music that resonates with those audiences. And at the end of the day, it's about telling a story that the audience can connect to. And yeah, that's something I think we're just super proud of, and something we cherish.
We often think of or use the term handholds when thinking about programming and audiences, and that we have this really unique opportunity because we combine the classical training and tradition and the kind of exemplified by the acoustic instruments, as well as the modern, energetic, dynamic edginess of the electric side. And for the young people, we might be the first concert they've ever been to that is instrumental, that has no lyrics, that is 60 minutes of listening to what you might call concert music. But they get in because we can sound like the rock band and we're playing modern pop covers. And then they end up sitting through a 6-minute piece that sounds more like a classical symphony. And then for on the other side of the spectrum, the audiences who may find themselves more at home listening to a Mahler symphony will come in through that side because we can play these exquisitely intimate and beautiful classical-like pieces. But then they'll also find themselves already there for some of these high energy tunes that we also play, and it's the handhold for them. And sometimes actually we're surprised because we get reminded that even that audience, there was a time when they were at, the music
Yeah,
festivals too. They
absolutely.
had their
Sure.
pop bands who they loved. And so finding the ways to bridge those seeming divides and bring these audiences together in a way that is really unique, I think it's a superpower that we have and the responsibility that we cherish.
Arkai will be performing at the New Marlboro Meeting House on September 21st at 4:30 p.m. The new album is Crossroads, and you can find out more information about Arkai and the new album and about their incredible work and see some videos. A very cool website. It's arkaimusic.com, arkaimusic.com, A-R-K-A-I music.com. And again, you can find out more information about the new Marlboro event by going to nmmeetinghouse.org, nmmeetinghouse.org. The performance September 21st at 4:30 p.m. Philip and Jonathan, thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you both on the show. Have a great gig, and best of luck with the album.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank
really
you.
Nice to talk to you both. Thank you very much. Be well. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.